Hare Krishna. It's our great pleasure to be here today with all of you. My parents have been here now. This is their second evening. I arrived last night. And for all of us, it's been a really wonderful experience here at ISKCON Chaupati Dham. We've visited here once briefly before, but really this is our first experience of the temple. And we just want to thank all the devotees here, especially those who organize this program, for engaging us in this way, allowing us to perform a little service for all the wonderful devotees of Shri Radha Gopinath. So thank you all for having us here, and we hope we can offer something that will be a little useful and worthwhile in regards to today's topic, which is Krishna conscious parenting and children's education. This is kind of a modified version of a seminar that my mother has been giving in various parts of the United States, and now for the first time during this trip has been launched in India. And So we'll begin with this seminar now, and both of us will contribute. She'll be speaking, and then I'll assist at various points.
Hare Krishna. I'm really happy to be here today at Chaupati. This is my first time, and I feel very, very grateful to be able to do this small service for Srila Prabhupada. And I hope, like Radhika said, it's going to be of some use to you. And it's going to be based on my experience with homeschooling my children, and that's what I'd like to share with you. And encourage at any point, if people have specific questions, to raise their hand and ask without hesitation. I'll just start out with a little bit about what our spiritual master Srila Prabhupada's vision was for our children in this movement. Srila Prabhupada wanted the children of devotee families to be pure Vaishnavas. He considered the children's spiritual education of the children as extremely urgent. There was three things that was of prime importance to him, and that was book distribution, deity worship, and Gurukula. So at one point he wrote a letter to one of his disciples, and he wrote that he considers the Gurukula as one of the most important aspects of the movement. Because if you can raise a generation of Krishna-conscious children, then that would be the glory of our movement and the glory of our country as well. And if we lose even one Vaishnava, that's a great loss. So we can just see by the statement how important it was to Srila Prabhupada that we educate our children in the proper manner. What Prabhupada wanted was a Vedic foundation for our children, Vedic education for our children for the first 16 years of their life. And then they could do whatever they wanted to do, whichever occupation they wanted to pursue. And he based his, you know, vision on Shastra, on precepts that we find in our scriptures. He gives so many examples. He gives examples of the Lord Krishna himself, you know, who went to Gurukula, other incarnations of Krishna like Lord Rishabhdev. He talks about how the influential citizens in the Vedic times, they sent their children to study at the Gurukula because they wanted them to learn qualities like sense control, you know, tapasya, you know. So they considered that very important, even though they came back to do, you know, to pursue different occupations in different ashrams. So he really stresses the point that every family, that every parent should not hamper their children, should not deny the children this kind of education, which kind of education? Not just academic education, but spiritual education. Just think, academic education without any spiritual qualities is of no use. He challenged that, what is the use of some academic education if we are to raise just people who are hypocrites, debauchees, and with no good qualities? What is the point? You know, what is the use of just degree holders, you know, whose knowledge is just stolen by illusion? He gives so many, even in the Bhagavad Gita, there's a verse which says that, you know, a learned sage sees with equal vision, you know, a cow or a dog eater or a gentle brahmana. So what is, so a person who has that equal vision, he quoted Chanakya Pandit so many times as a test of any good education, which is one who considers every woman as his mother, other than his wife, one who considers others' property as unattractive, and one who considers others as equal to himself. See, he stressed these three things. That's the meaning of true education. Okay. Just think, if a small child is raised right from the beginning of his life to see every woman as a mother and has no other idea, and any woman who comes before him is a mother, how can he morally or spiritually go wrong? Anyone who considers, you know, everybody's property as garbage, as unattractive, how can he go wrong? And also, he talked about how we should have to consider other living entities as ourselves. Whether we, you know, including the animals, how can we consider eating meat and cut their throat? Even if we don't believe they have a soul, still we understand that they have pain just like we have pain. So this is the test of true education. This is what he meant by true education when he talked about our children getting education. Prabhupada stressed character education, spiritual education, in addition to academic education. So, and that's why he stressed on the Gurukula. He said, in order to learn the value of life, one has to go to a guru. So that, under the shelter of the guru, when a person surrenders, then the guru, by his grace, gives all the knowledge. So in today's world, you know, it's very difficult, isn't it, to find a Gurukula where we want to send our children. So what do we do in that sense? So the word guru means teacher, and kula means ashram. So in our case, in many of our cases, even when our children are going to school or whether we are home educating them, the parents becomes the first gurus of the child, and the ashram becomes the home. So we can raise our children in such a way that we can train them in such a way, you know, and adapt according to time, place and circumstance, in which we can follow the instructions of Srila Prabhupada and benefit and please not only Srila Prabhupada but benefit our children as well as the whole society. Because this kind of training not only makes children with good qualities but also goes for good leaders and good citizens. People think when they get spiritual education, it's a career just for preaching or for, you know, living in the ashram. No, without these good qualities, one cannot even take care of himself, what to take care of other people. He cannot even help himself, what to help others. So if you want to guarantee the happiness of our children, Prabhupada says, we have to consider this Krishna conscious education. So thinking, considering this, and he, of course, he emphasizes this point by comparing today's education with, you know, Vedic education. He says how he calls today's education, you know, just material sense gratification, like modern slaughterhouses, you know, where children are just simply sent in order to just learn more and more about how to gratify their senses. There is no information of the soul. They are taught to consider the body all in all, to consider that the main function in life is to eat, sleep, mate and defend. But he challenges and he asks that, do we really need an education to understand these four things? Just consider eating. Do we need to be educated how to eat? And he gives a very nice humorous example of how a child, when you give him something, a very small baby, he knows where to put it in. He doesn't put it in his hand or leg or anything. He knows it is the mouth where the food goes in. right? For sleeping, we don't need any education. Similarly, for sex education, it's all natural. Even the animals do it. So what is it that we as humans, as children, what is it we need that is more than what the animals need? And that is, you know, spiritual education. So spiritual education means restriction of these four activities. How to restrict these four things. Otherwise, he says, we make our children into sense gratifiers at a very early age. If the child knows that the body is all in all, and his only business is to gratify his body, then he has lost it. It's the greatest violence we can do as parents to the child. So, for example, Chaitanya Charitamrita, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Ramanand Roy, what is the standard of good education? Then Ramanand Roy replies that it is the science of Krishna consciousness is the highest education. Why? Because Krishna is the source of all knowledge. Krishna sets the standard of civilization through the scriptures and through great examples. So even to live in this material world, we need to have knowledge of Krishna. What about going back to Godhead? Just to live and survive here, we have to know about Krishna. Because Krishna created this material world. And in order to be happy here, we need to know about him. So he also talks about how there are two kinds of happiness. One is happiness that is very short-lived, immediate happiness, and one is more lasting happiness. Immediate happiness is material happiness, material sense gratification. Just like a child, when he goes out to play, he doesn't care about his education, about his health or anything. But that's just for immediate happiness, for immediate sense gratification. But the parents know what is better for him, right? Similarly, material education is like that. But spiritual education is lasting, is eternally beneficial. It's more related to achieving pure love of God, our relationship with God, to understand who am I, what am I doing here, and what is our purpose and our relationship with Him. So when we understand this vision of Srila Prabhupada, considering that, we understand that Krishna conscious education is of prime importance. It does not matter in whatever situation we are, whether we are as grihastha, you know, where we are sending our children to school or we are homeschooling, in whatever situation we are, it's important that we actually give them spiritual education. He said that is the duty of a mother and father. What is the duty of a mother and father? Is to raise children only if they can lead them back to Godhead. To promise the child that this is the last time you are in my womb, that you will not take another birth. He says there's enough of, you know, the other, you know, the non spiritually educated children out there. We don't need to add to that number. So if we can promise that, then we are qualified to become mother and father. So when I read, so I thought that considering his vision, when I became a mother and I sent my children to school for the first 2 years, and I was now I shall tell you the history of how I started on this Krishna conscious education. Really, when I started on this path, I really didn't know much about Prabhupada's vision, but I did know that I was extremely dissatisfied.
Radhika, did you want to add something? Hare Krishna.
My mother has very nicely described the ideal that Srila Prabhupada presented before us. It's kind of a very tall order in terms of the responsibility of parenthood and the responsibility of children themselves in terms of living up to this ideal of Krishna conscious education and making it our life in the material world. So the question becomes, well, how do we accomplish this? All of us, like my mother is saying, we're in different circumstances. We have different problems in life. We have different assets, different abilities, different needs. And how can we accomplish this? Yesterday's seminar that my father gave was kind of the groundwork for this in terms of providing a method of balancing one's personal life, work life, and one's devotional life. Because these three things often we find have competing interests in our life. And so yesterday he gave guidelines, some directions on how to balance these through giving some of our personal experience in that regard. So each one of us, we have slightly different situations. We live in different parts of the world, in different parts of the city, and so on. Our children are also of different natures. So the idea here is that we hope to present you with a model, an example of a method that we followed. My mother, my parents did in terms of homeschooling. And this was largely by method of homeschooling. In other words, teaching myself and my younger brother at home. Like she'll describe in a minute, we went to school for a couple years, but afterwards my parents became dissatisfied with the nature of the education outside. And they pulled us out of school and taught us at home, largely using a method, a medium, based on Srila Prabhupada's books. Okay. So that was our experience as a family. Now, what we've done today is, in this presentation, we've generalized that to try to describe various kinds of principles for Krishna conscious education and principles for parenting, Krishna conscious parenting, so as to not limit it specifically to a homeschool situation. Okay? Many of the things that we talk about will apply to a homeschool situation, but our hope is that everyone can take those aspects of the presentation, those principles, which will be most applicable in their own personal circumstances. Okay, so the hope is that many of these items that we described can be applied regardless of one's individual circumstance. But naturally, some things will be very relevant and other things will be less relevant. So that's kind of the intention of the seminar as we now proceed into the heart of the actual seminar. These are our deities in Boise, Idaho. As you heard yesterday, we have a mid-sized temple that my parents have been running for the past 20 years. And their most merciful lordships are Shishi Radha Banki Bihari, as well as Shishi Gornitai and Shishi Jagannath Baladev Subhadra. They've been our proprietors, our protectors, our providers ever since I can remember, and for the last about now 22 years. Something like that, in Boise, Idaho, United States.
So, like Radhika said, I'm here to convince you to try some Krishna conscious education on the side if you're sending your children to school, and if you're homeschooling, to do it as well. So, Prabhupada said, of course we know that there's a lot of benefits of home, Krishna conscious home education. But what Prabhupada said was that there are two great blessings for anyone. One is the guidance of a spiritual master, and two, to be born in a family of devotees. So he said that any child that's born in a family of Vaishnavas is not an ordinary child. He's very, very special. Because he's already done a lot of devotional service in his past life. He could have been a yogi in his past life and has not finished his work. And this might be his last life. So we, as parents, we have to understand that these children who are born in our families, they're not ordinary children. And therefore, it becomes our prime duty to give them, you know, additional Krishna consciousness in this life so they can continue with their Krishna consciousness. So that, you know, that in itself is, so as parents we see them as servants of Krishna and ourselves also as servants of Krishna, and we teach them accordingly. And of course, if our children are going to school, Krishna conscious education helps the children counteract the negative, you know, influence in the schools, which we all are aware of how strong that is. I mean, I'm sure you have experienced that with your children, how, you know, they just go for a few hours and they come back with so much negativity or materialistic ideas that it takes like a few days to try to counteract that. I experienced that myself. I mean, something that would happen in 1 hour, it would take me days to actually counteract that you know, idea. They would come with, you know, when they would go, they would come with demands for, you know, different things from, you know, that they would see. They would, you know, be exposed to so many things, you know, so many ideas. And so that Krishna consciousness in some form or the other at home does help in counteracting that influence. Because so, like Prabhupada said, you know, they are brainwashing our children, but we are trying to unwash that brainwashing. So like that. And as a result, children benefit. They become good devotees. They become strong devotees. And like I said earlier, it is important to do this because ultimately, parents, they become the most intimate associates for the children. The children are so dependent on the parents for good character, intelligence. You know, we sometimes don't realize, you know, because we are living so closely with them, that they depend on us for that. So by being, you know, good examples, which this kind of education, giving them this kind of education will provide, because like when we give them Krishna conscious education, we become Krishna conscious ourselves. You know, and I experienced that in my own life, that when my children were young, I was a new devotee, and I wasn't, you know, I wasn't initiated, but I really didn't know much Shastra, or, you know, I was struggling with my, you know, my sadhana and so many things. But as I taught my children, I realized that I have to be a good example. So it helped my own Krishna consciousness. Whatever Krishna consciousness I did was for them, but in turn I benefited from that. So it also makes parents better devotees. It has so much good advantage. And most of all, what it did for my children is that it helped them academically, because, you know, Krishna conscious education also means reading Srila Prabhupada's books. And whether the children are being educated 100% at home or whether they're going to school, reading Srila Prabhupada's books is definitely going to make a difference in their academic life. Their understanding of philosophy, their understanding of English language, critical thinking will definitely shoot up. And that's my personal experience, and we can talk about it in later slides. So the question arises, how do you do a Krishna conscious education for children, given the circumstances that each one of us might be in, right? So the basic principle of a Krishna conscious education is a Krishna conscious lifestyle. Prabhupada said the best way to teach children is to just let the children follow the example of the elders, to do what the elders do. In other words, there need not be any separate education for the children, he said, quite emphatically. In other words, the children, they have a tendency to imitate. So, and they are like sponges, you know, whatever you tell them, whatever spiritual knowledge that you give them between the ages of 5 and 15, they carry with them throughout their life. So basic Krishna conscious lifestyle is going to go a long way in helping them, you know, become Krishna conscious. What does the basic Krishna conscious lifestyle mean? Well, just like we would live as devotees at home, as sincere, serious devotees, as we would live at home. In other words, we would start the day with, you know, morning program, you know, with Mangala Aarti, you know, with reading of the scriptures, with prasadam. And then we, of course, you know, for men, we go to our work. And for mothers, we, you know, the children can go to school, if they go to school. And for us, we continue with our devotional service in some form or the other. Of course, my children were homeschooled, so I continued my devotional service with them after that. In other words, we studied the scriptures, we discussed it, then we would do different other activities. In other words, we would put that philosophy that we learned in the scriptures into actual practice. We would apply that in actual practice, which meant, you know, going on book distribution, going on Harinam, preaching activities, you know, holding festivals, practicing for festivals, so many other things. We would do that. Krishna consciousness made our life so busy. It was so much fun that we actually never had any time to think about anything else. I still miss those days when I was homeschooling. I tell you, it was my most happiest days of my life when I was homeschooling. Because parents asked me, how do you do it? It's so much work. But I felt like I was going to work hard anyway. When they were going to school, I worried so much. I was always in constant anxiety as to what they were doing, what they were picking up from school, what they were eating. I was constantly making cookies and cakes to substitute for the cookies and cakes that, you know, because every day they had some birthday party there. So I was running there with them, and, you know, just so much anxiety till they came back home. I felt so much more peaceful when they were home. When I celebrated festivals, I felt like I had great assistants and, you know, people that I could enjoy, you know, have fun with. They were great association for me as well. So we can do the same thing, no matter what our circumstances, that we can plan a day of Krishna consciousness with the children even after they come back from school. And I've had many questions regarding that, how we can do that. You know, there's so many activities in Krishna consciousness. There's so many activities. Just about every day is a festival for us, isn't it? And the children just love festivals, and we'll talk about that in the future slides. Like I mentioned earlier, one of the very important things for educating our children in Krishna consciousness is our own Krishna consciousness. But with all, you know, honesty, I can say that I wasn't, you know, like a Pakka devotee when I first started out. I had a lot of faults. And but in hindsight, I can remember that just trying to be sincere devotees and trying to make our children sincere devotees is something very, very crucial, and something that actually works and can work in any situation. So Prabhupada said that a child who lives with the parents, especially in a Gurukula situation, the child was always living with the Gurukula teachers, the teacher must be initiated and must follow the four regulative principles. So obviously that also applies for the parents. They must be initiated devotees, or at least trying to be initiated devotees, and must try to follow the four regulative principles. Because there is no teacher. In the Vedic system, there was no teacher without good qualities. In other words, a teacher that, he said, that smokes and drinks or breaks all these principles is not really a teacher. A child cannot learn from such a teacher. And whatever he learns will be disastrous. Just for example, in today's world, when we see children who have bad role models, you know, film stars and, you know, sports stars and all these people who have maybe some talents, but who are in character, they are very, very questionable, you know, how disastrous it is for them. I mean, it can lead sometimes to total disaster for the children. So good role models is very, very much stressed for educating our children in the proper way. And we should try to be a good role model for the children. And parents, you know, are natural teachers. You know, we love our children. So this becomes very natural for us to want to see that our children will become, you know, ideal, good Vaishnavas. Because Prabhupada said that how among the Muslims, you know, even as small children are taught the Quran right from the beginning, but we see how among the Hindus this is not encouraged. The children are never encouraged to read the Bhagavad Gita. In fact, they are discouraged from joining a spiritual institution or reading the Bhagavad Gita, and that has such a detrimental effect on the children because they become disrespectful. We should not be surprised when children become disrespectful to their elders, because their relationship is based on material love, on just the body. So when they don't get what their senses are demanding, they get upset, they get angry. When they're little, it is fine, but as they get older and the demands for sense gratification increases, then they actually get angry. They demand that from us. And they become disrespectful. So how can we be surprised? So Prabhupada says that when young people, they misbehave and they burn buses and create riots, we should not be surprised, because we did not give them the character training as parents. We did not allow them to learn the Vedic scriptures. He gives the example of Prajapati Daksha in Canto 6. You know, in a purport, Prabhupada says how he was asked to increase progeny, the population, and how he sent his second group of sons also to the same place as his first group for penances. And when he sent his first group, they were, as you know the story, they were diverted by Narad Muni not to create, you know, to create population. And so Prajapati Daksha got really upset. But that did not deter him from sending his children again for spiritual instruction. So Prabhupada writes in the purport, no parents should deter their children from getting spiritual education. Then it's up to them what they want to do. They can follow any profession, any occupation they want to. But by denying them, in place of just fulfilling their material sense gratification, just providing their material needs, is not good. It's useless, actually. That work becomes useless if we simply are there just to fulfill their material needs. But if we help them to become Krishna conscious and to follow this Krishna conscious lifestyle, which may appear like austerity, but really it is not austerity. If we train them from the beginning, they really think it's kind of fun. They don't see it as an austerity. Isn't it? It's just fun for them. It's only when we pamper, Prabhupada called it pampered animalism, you know, when we just pamper them and give them and, you know, flood them with all these material toys and all these material things, you know, cars and cell phones and all these latest things, and we ignore, you know, the spiritual life, then, you know, we shouldn't be surprised. We are in the future for a lot of trouble. In the beginning, children really look sweet and cute, and they're actually very Krishna conscious too. But as they get older, and they get exposed to all things at school, all the different, you know, things they expose, the materialism that they get exposed to school, then the trouble really starts. And unless we build a very strong Krishna conscious lifestyle based on love and education, training, Prabhupada said everything should be based on love, but good training. Because without good training, there can be no discipline. Without good discipline, there can be no good obedience. Without obedience, we can't manage them. So we have to give them good spiritual training. We should not spoil them. He said for the first 5 years of their life, we have to be lenient with them, their children. They have little responsibility. They can do very little responsibility. But between 5 and 15... Between 5 and 10, a little bit more strictness. But between 10 and 16, we should be strict as a tiger. Prabhupada said that. He spelled out everything. Anything you want to know about how to raise children is all there. And he said after 16, you have to treat them like a friend. Otherwise, they'll run away. And we've heard stories like that. It's too late after 16. You know, some Prabhu was telling me in Delhi that how he travels a lot by trains, and at 8 o'clock at night when he's ready to go to sleep, how these families will give their children Coca-Cola at night, at 8 o'clock at night. And they become so hyper, they're running around the train all night. And this is what we think is love. So we're all guilty of that. We are so grateful to Prabhupada for showing us what real education means, what real intelligence is. We have to start rethinking. He's challenging us to think what real education is. So far we've been thinking real education means good schools, good job, good money. Now he's challenging us to think, what is real education? Real education is Bhagavat education. Any education that helps a child think, inquire about the purpose of life. Who are we? Why are we? What is the purpose of life? That is real education. So he's challenging us. Prabhupada is challenging us. And when we do this, this Krishna conscious lifestyle for them, we will be very happy one day. Because as they get older, they will be able to face this world. And we know what's out there. We know the drugs, we know all the lures of illicit sex and drugs that's out there. They'll be able to face it. So we are not isolating our children from what's out there. We are insulating them. So parents are very, very crucial for building good character in our children.
The presentation is now divided into three parts based on a very famous motto that we hear often in ISKCON. Purity is the force, books are the basis, and preaching is the essence. And there's a fourth one also, utility is the principle. That was more the topic of my father's presentation yesterday. We'll be focusing on three here. Purity is the force, preaching is the essence, and books are the basis. And using those as basically categories under which to organize the presentation, various aspects of children's education and parenting. So the first one we'll begin with here is purity is the force. Creating the right environment in the home and in our families, in our lives, to cultivate this type of character building and Krishna conscious education that my mother is speaking about.
So we've been talking about how we can do different things to make a Krishna conscious lifestyle for ourselves, right? In terms of a morning program and, you know, deity worship and creating a mood of, you know, shastra and reading shastra. But there are many things that we should not do in order to preserve this nice Krishna conscious atmosphere. And one of them, the most important things, is no television. I know this is very, very hard in India because everybody is hooked to TV. In America also, the average time a person sees TV is like 6 hours. That's the average. Every day, yes. So you can imagine 8 hours to go to school, 8 hours to sleep, and 6 hours of this. That leaves 2 hours for our daily necessities. So that's the lifestyle. Oh, dear.
So television, no television is... sounds quite radical, but if you look at any number of different studies and surveys and so forth that people have done and research, you find that television has so many negative qualities. It basically destroys in so many ways the intelligence and the creativity of the person watching, especially for children. They've done these studies on adults and also on children. But whatever results they get for adults are, of course, multiplied much, much more for children because their minds are so impressionable. Basically, television is a form of passive learning. When you're reading something, right? Suppose you take a nice book to read. It has a nice story in it or some kind of point is being made. Then the person who's reading has to read it and then they have to work to get the information off the page, right? Just putting the book in front of someone is not going to... You have to actually work to read it and to extract the information, to understand it. And then you have to create a picture in your mind. I suppose some beautiful scene is being described. Then you have to create that picture in your mind and use the powers of the imagination and the intelligence to understand what you're saying. Now, if you listen to, for example, a radio, right, then you don't have to work so hard to get the information. It's being fed through you through the medium of sound. But at the same time, you still have to create that picture in your mind to envision what's going on. In the case of television, you don't need to make any effort whatsoever, right? There's no effort needed to, you can just sit there on the couch and download, all the information is downloaded in us. And we can just, we don't have to make effort to extract it, and we don't have to make any effort to create the picture. No use of the imagination, no use of the intelligence is required. They've done studies saying that when someone sees something on a screen, whether it's the television or the computer, they immediately think that it's true. It must be true. If the television is telling me something, then it must be true. And we might think, no, I'm very rational and I'm a very skeptical person. But studies show that it doesn't matter how rational or skeptical is. You have a much greater chance of accepting something when it's presented to us on a screen rather than when it's presented to us in print or in a book or in a newspaper or something like that. Because it's so visually powerful, so visually arresting. So it basically creates morons. It creates a very dull type of intelligence. And we don't realize it because in this age it's so widespread, right? Everyone's doing it, so we think, oh, this is the standard. Everyone is like this. But any form of downloading through the medium of screen creates this kind of damage. It dulls the intelligence. It dulls the mind. Growing up, I know I used to have many friends who were into these video games. I'm sure here also people play these video games. It used to be on the Game Boy and on your television screen you had various buttons and these characters would be jumping across the screen and you'd have to cross various hurdles and get various things. These days many people are not playing on the television but on their computers. Right? Computer games is a huge industry around the world, and it must be in India also, right? People playing computer games. There's people who call themselves professional gamers, and this is what they do. They get these gaming equipment, and they connect with other people supposedly and play these games for hours. Right? It creates a whole fake visual world, right? The television, the computer, the video games. And these friends of mine, we used to go over to their house sometimes to play. And we thought, oh, we're going to have a good time. Because when they came to the temple and they were in our house, it was so much fun playing with them. And we'd go to their place and we'd spend the whole day and come back completely frustrated. Because the whole day they insisted on playing video games together or watching television together. And we found it so boring, right? So frustrating. Why can't we do something else? Why can't we play hide and seek? Why can't we play cops and robbers? Why can't we play some kind of, act out some kind of scene or something like that? Once you realize what the difference is, right, then you realize, my God, this is really dissatisfying. It's really one-sided. It's very dulling in nature. On top of that, you have all the content, right? So all this I've said is in terms of the medium of communication. Which in itself, when it's coming through a screen, this visual medium of communication, then that in itself is quite dulling. It's quite damaging. In terms of Vedic education, right? It was completely non-visual in the sense it was completely through the medium of sound. And this is why people were able to, they were called Shruti Dhara, right? People who could hear something and immediately learn it. That sounds, oh, that must be very difficult. Maybe it's just stories or mythology or something like that. We might be skeptical. Only very rare people can do that kind of thing. But in fact, if you look at the history of our own culture, then this is not too long ago. Even now you can find people. Right? My own teacher, when I was studying at Oxford, he was a visiting professor there. He was head of the Department of Vaishnavism at University of Madras in Chennai. And very very amazing person, very learned, Sri Vaishnava by practice. And he had practically all the shastras memorized. Right? Practically everything. He could give a lecture on any topic by memory. Such an amazing personality. Right? But he used to tell me that if you met my guru and the people of the generation before me, those who are in the category of my teachers, he said, I would look like nothing in front of them. Of course, it was also his humility. But still, he said, my guru, what he would do is when I wanted to study a book with him, some shastra or any kind of book, he would invite me over and he would ask me, please show me the book you want to study. And then he would make small talk with me, chit-chat, how are things going and how's your family and how's your parents. And in the meantime, he'd be flipping through the book. And then he'd turn around and he'd give the book back to me. And he said, okay, now follow along. And he would recite the whole thing from memory. Right? And he would teach line by line from memory while he, the student, was following along in the book. So such powers of memory, such powers of intelligence, they're not simply the material of stories. We shouldn't think, oh, somehow it's ancient and maybe 5,000 years ago people could do this and not anymore. No, only just a few generations before us, this type of capability was still present. But we've basically prevented that by creating a society where everything is information download. Right? Everything is present on Wikipedia. Everything is present on the internet. Right? There's no use of any kind of memory or intelligence required. Right? And what we don't realize is information is not the same thing as knowledge. Right? You can get any amount of information. When I'm teaching at the university, I teach at the University of William and Mary in the United States. It's such a struggle to get my students to do any kind of research or thinking without the use of the internet. They find something on the internet. Research means looking something up on Wikipedia. And they find it and they just write it down. And half the time it's wrong. I tell them, how do you know that the person who put it up on that website had any idea of what they were saying? Right? According to our shastras, it is not the content that is as important as the source of the knowledge, right? The source of the knowledge is as important, even more important, than the content that is conveyed. Because the point that is made in our shastras is that if the source is good, then you are guaranteed that the content will be good. Because a good source will never give you, will never cheat you with improper knowledge. But if the source is questionable or unknown, then you can never be sure about the content. Never. And how do you know? So not just information is necessary, but the motivation behind that information. Who's giving it? Why are they giving it? And the nature of television, and especially of internet, is that it completely removes the source from the picture. There's no source involved. It doesn't matter who's saying it, but it's on a website. And that website gives you information. But the source is completely absent. It's not known. One very nice motto is we've heard many times in classes and so forth is that education is for the purpose of not information but for transformation. Right? That's the point of knowledge. Knowledge is not for just information, but for transformation. It means some change has to be effected in the heart. Something has to be changed as a result. So, in terms of the medium of knowledge, television is it destroys the capabilities of the memory and the intelligence and so forth. Even Western researchers, they say that in Europe, in the Middle Ages, what they normally call the Dark Ages, if you remember European history, right, in that period, they said people had, they call it the Middle Ages or the Dark Ages, but people had 400 times the memory capability that we have today, 400 times the size. And it was only, they said, because they made use of their intelligence, their memory, that's all. There's no known capacity for the ability of the human mind to learn things. No limit is known. No one has ever found a limit. It's just we create our own limits by dulling ourselves through the medium of this information. Now, the second point is that besides the medium, there's also obviously the content is also a major problem. Right? What is conveyed on the television, what is conveyed on in the internet, the vast majority of it is frivolous in nature, and at best, right? And at worst, it's full of violence and sex life. Children, they pick up so many things. They're so impressionable. Urmila Mataji, she's a great leader of education in ISKCON. She, in one of her BTG articles, she described the television as the one-eyed guru, right? The one-eyed guru. We sit in front of the one-eyed guru, and whatever the guruji says, we accept. Right? We might have some capability for questioning it, but children, almost nothing. Right? They just accept everything that's coming. And the whole idea of television, is to incite all these material desires as much as possible. Create needs in ourselves that we never realized we had. Right? And we see it enough times and it becomes an absolute necessity. They've done studies that if you see the same commercial, have you ever wondered why they repeat the same commercial over and over and over and over again? You think, well, obviously I've seen it. I can probably recite the commercial by memory. I've seen it so many times. They've done studies that say after a person sees a commercial 7 times, they develop a need to get the product. They have to buy the product. 7 times. First few times, they think about it or they forget about it, they ignore it. 7 times, at the 7th time, the strong dhyayato vishayan pungsa sangasteshu pajayate. That sangha develops. Sangha sanjayate kama, and that lust. And then you see it in children. They go to the supermarket or they start begging, please give me this, please give me that, please give me this, please give me that. Right? And they don't get it. Sangha sanjayate kama, kamat krodho vijayate. Right? Temper tantrums and upset and why is this, this, I want that and my friend has it and I don't have it. I saw it on television, everyone who's cool has it and this movie star has it and I don't have it, like that. So we think, okay, no, I just let them watch children's programming, things that is appropriate for them, educational programming. But all the commercials in children's programming are especially directed towards who?
Children.
They know who's watching, right? So they specifically try to target the material desires of the children who are watching. Now, besides all this, the violence and the sex life and so forth that we find on television, right, people often say, well, what about the news? My children, they need to know what's going on in the world. Right? Otherwise, they'll come across as completely stupid in front of their friends and they'll be embarrassed and so forth. Right? So what about just keeping up with the world? Isn't that necessary for my children? Yes, there may be some value in knowing the news, in knowing what's going on in the world. But what one will get from 1 hour of television watching, we can get from 20 minutes of reading a newspaper. And reading a newspaper will be a far more educational experience and a more positive experience for a child or for an adult, for us, than a television will be. Sometimes we develop this fear, oh, I'll be uninformed. My children will be uninformed. But that's not a fact. Right? That's not a fact. In our family, we spent our whole family life from the beginning not watching television. Right? I don't have any memories of watching television except at houses of friends when I went there sometimes. Right? Or some major event happened, a major international event. We might turn it on for a few minutes. Right? An average was about 15, 20 minutes, half an hour at most, of television per year. Right, that was our average. So it's in the beginning, maybe it's a little challenging, right? Some questions are there. Especially when I'm teaching my students, they'll ask me about some, did you see this show about India that came out on PBS or Discovery Channel or something? And I'll say, no, I didn't get a chance to catch it. What was it? And some questions might be there you don't know, or some conversation we might not be able to participate in. But it's okay. It's okay. The point is, everyone knows that we're devotees of Krishna, right? People should understand that we're different. And like I said, if it's important to gain that kind of knowledge, then we can get it through the medium of newspapers, right? And that'll keep us informed, right? I've noticed myself, if I ever waste an hour reading the news on the internet, for example, or if I ever happen to watch television, and you read the headlines on the upper half of the newspaper as it comes out on the newsstand, you practically get the same amount of content. If you just go through the newspaper and read the headlines, you know enough, I can guarantee you, to hold a decent conversation with anyone. Mm-hmm. Because they know most readers don't have the patience to read the entire article anyway. Right? So they put the headline and the first paragraph. Everything is there. In journalism, that's kind of a rule. In the first paragraph, you put the essence of the entire article present. Right? And you read the headline, you read the first paragraph, you'll know enough to hold a decent conversation, look respectable in front of anyone. Now, you might not be able to quote the latest quotations and this and that and all the details, but that's okay. Right? That's one thing. We don't have to be popular in all our circles. Right? Our main goal is to be popular in our circle of devotees. That's the main thing, in front of Krishna, in front of the spiritual master. So that's kind of the idea behind television. Oftentimes we don't realize what a powerful force it is in our life. Right? This is one of Maya's greatest tools in the age of Kali, where no one has to go out of the home for any kind of material training. Right? She comes right into our home, into our living rooms, into our family rooms. Some people have separate televisions in the bedrooms. Sometimes they install televisions for the children even. Right? So this is her way of getting at us in a very intimate way, in a very close way. And pass through all the barriers, the barrier of the teachers, of the parents, of the spiritual master. The spiritual master will speak to us in the temple. The parents will speak to us in the home, the teacher in the school. But the television, through that Maya, she will speak to us in our own bedrooms. Right? In such a close way that we cannot stop her. We cannot stop her. So it seems like a very simple point, but it can have quite a profound effect in creating the pure atmosphere necessary for education.
I think one other point is that it makes a child very lazy, mentally lazy, because the TV is doing all the work for us. So studies have done that children who watch a lot of TV, they have a hard time focusing on their studies. So we shouldn't be surprised if children don't do well at their studies if they're watching a lot of TV. Because we don't have to think. They do poorly, and especially in things like math. Because they have to exercise their brain. And they've been trained just to sit there idle and watch. You know.
And the internet is, of course, very, very similar in nature. If they've also done recently studies that 90 to 95% of all the content on internet is either violent or pornographic in nature. 90 to 95%. And 84%, something like that, of all emails sent in the world is spam. So you can see what the internet is primarily used for. And by giving our children free access and addicting them to the internet, in the United States, psychologists, if you talk to them, they have now an official condition on the books called internet addiction. And people have to go to counseling because they can't stop surfing the internet, one link to another link to another link to another link, and in this way waste hours of their time.
So a lot of parents ask then, if they don't watch TV, what do I do with them? They have to spend their time somewhere, you know. So again, that becomes a challenge for us parents, as to how to keep them satisfied in Krishna consciousness. So we are talking about that, different things that we can do to keep our life active in Krishna consciousness. And like Prabhupada said, I mean, newspaper gets obsolete in one day, you have to throw it away, TV news gets obsolete, but Krishna consciousness is full of variety. It never gets old. So there's so much to do out there that we can use our time in place of television. So the other things that you know, that are conducive to a good home life is, like we mentioned already, is a good morning program. And you know, I've had a lot of questions about how to do that, work that around with children's school and so many things. So Prabhupada considered the morning hours very, very beneficial for spiritual life. And we have to try as much as we can to try to give the children some kind of spiritual, you know, life before they leave for school, because it trains the mind. The morning hours, before, as soon as you wake up, you cleanse yourself, you know, and go to the temple, to your home temple. So that is very good training for the mind. It helps the mind focus on Krishna. It insulates the mind for what is to come ahead. So that's why the morning program is very, very important for keeping the child Krishna conscious. It makes, you know, what I also found is that that when I started out with the morning program, sometimes it couldn't, you know, we had festivals, we were running a center, later temple, and we would have late nights, and sometimes it was difficult to get up in the morning, so they would wake up late, but I still always had a morning program. I tried never to miss a morning program, because it was so beneficial. You know, when they did a morning program, the rest of the day went so well. And if I missed it, I was in for trouble. They were cranky. Everything went wrong. So the morning program, you know, helps in controlling the senses, in all our senses, in a good behavior. Practically all the misbehavior problems goes away when we do a nice, you know, morning program. Which, you know, so we can try to do that, and if, you know, a little bit in the morning before they go to school, and when they come home in the evening, we can do another one, the evening program, which you know, which is when they have more time, we can do a nice Gaura Aarti, chanting loudly, singing. These are very, very important things. We, as a family, we tend to think that, you know, we have so many more important things to do, so many more important things to take care of, no time. But we have to see that this is the most important thing. This is what keeps the family together. A family that reads and chants together stays together. It's a fact. So this is something that we can all do at some point during the day as a family, read and chant together. So we'll, he's saying that we should go speed up a little bit. It's getting quite late. So, japa is also very important. Prabhupada encouraged the children to do japa, but he did not want us to force our children to do japa. We should encourage them as much as possible, give them a set of beads. I gave my children beads as early as when they were 3 years old. Of course, they could not finish a round, but they wanted to imitate and be part of, you know, it felt very good for them to be a devotee. And so even if they did 1/4 of a round, it's good. So we should try to do, encourage them and always do japa with them rather than leave them alone to do japa, because they develop bad habits. So right from the beginning, we try to give them a big taste of the holy name.
One point on that japa is that I remember my mother would always make it kind of a fun activity by doing japa with us. I remember sessions where we'd sit and chant together, and she would not when we were young, she'd never leave us on our own. Oh, take your beads and go do japa, because that almost becomes like a punishment for a child. They get other things. You know, it was never like, oh, you finish your round, then you can do this. Because that becomes, the japa becomes the barrier between what you want and what you have, right? The japa is standing in the way. So it creates a negative impression for chanting right from the start. I'll give you this good food to eat, or you can go play if you finish your japa, right? But rather she tried to present it like japa was the play. It was the fun activity. And she did this by always chanting with us. So we saw, oh, it's important enough for her to chant, and so it must be a nice thing to do, because we see our mother chanting. It's not something she puts me away to do on the side when she's got better things to do or other things to do. No, rather we do it together. So that's one thing I remember was very nice about the way my mother was doing japa with us.
The next thing which is conducive for Krishna conscious environment at home is prasadam. Giving children always prasadam. And we, of course, we are all well aware of that. You know, like Lord Chaitanya, he said the yuga dharma for this age is chanting of the holy name. And like, unlike other incarnations who came to annihilate demons, he annihilated the demoniac mentality through the chanting of the holy name and through prasadam. So prasadam is very, very powerful. In the same way, it's very, very powerful in controlling the restless minds of the children. For children, eating is a big activity. We all know that. And so we can curb their restless nature through giving them nice prasadam. Prabhupada said that we don't have to go out of our way to give them luxurious prasadam, but just healthy, nutritious prasadam of dal, rice, sabji and chapati. So, you know, eating non-prasadam items is not good for our consciousness. We should try to avoid it as much as possible, and just try to work on nutritious prasadam. And for us, we try to, you know, for parties, you know, as you know, for children, there's a big thing about birthday parties and outside pizza parties, and it becomes a big problem for parents to, you know, whether we should go to them or not go to them. So what I would do is I would feed them, if I had to go, if they had to go, then I would feed them a lot of prasadam ahead of time. So that when they went, they were full, and there was, you know, because little children, it's hard to explain to them, you know. As they get older, then you can explain to them. And they are able to understand that this is an austerity that they would, which is fun austerity, which they are doing for Krishna. My younger son one time wrote an essay about how he felt, every time he did that, he felt he had a secret pact with Krishna, how he was never going to eat food that was not offered. So they seem to, you know, children are very innocent, and they actually go out and start preaching to other people, whereas we hesitate to tell people why we are not eating their food. But they have absolutely no hesitation. So it's, so that is one way. Or sometimes I would cook prasadam and take it with me, and it would be a potluck, and my pot would be there, and we would just only eat from that pot without anybody noticing. So we were still there, but we are eating only prasadam. So there are so many ways to go around it. And we, like we mentioned earlier, you know, we should be proud to be devotees. And now, you know, initially with, you know, if the children are going to school, you may have to do all these things, which I was trying to do. But among devotees, I mean, a lot of people are so, they're so appreciative of our clean habits and all those things. They actually go out of their way to make separate things for us. And they invite us saying that, look, we've done everything. We've bought even new pots just to cook for you and just for you to come and have prasadam and keep them. So, we, you know, sometimes it's, you know, very difficult. And Ganapati Swami, who used to visit us, he said, he gave us a principle to follow. He said, if there's kirtan, if you're going for a program at kirtan and they're cooking prasadam, you can have that. But it, you should not have it if you're just a party and you just no reason for being there, you know. So we would try to follow that rule, you know.
Well, one of the things I remember in that regard is how strict my father was in terms of eating only prasadam, even when he was traveling on business. He used to travel a lot for Hewlett-Packard and sometimes on long international trips for several weeks in the Far East and places like that, where it's very, very difficult to get vegetarian food, what to speak of get prasad. But he was so insistent on packing food from home, and then when that would run out, he would practically live just on fruits and nuts and salad and things like that. And it provided a very nice model for me, because as I grew up and then I took my first teaching position and everything, then so many situations required where you had to socially go out and have dinner with your colleagues at work or some event was there. And for each of these, okay, I remembered, okay, my father did it, I can do it also. Right? And I would just order, in advance, I'd call the restaurant up and say, please can you make me a plate of fresh cut fruit, right? Some nice tropical fruits or something like that. And because it was, they said, just all you're going to eat? I said, yeah, just fruits. So they'd really make a nice effort, and pineapples and grapes and all these varieties of fruits. And when it would show up on the table, it would look the best out of everyone's food. Everyone would look around and go, oh, the chef really likes you, huh? What happened? How did you manage to get that? And I said, no, it's nothing, it's just fruit. But the point is that the key is the parents making the children part of every aspect of their life. You know, in terms of parties, I remember my parents would never go to any kind of work party if the children were not invited. Right? So we understood very clearly that we're in this together. We're a family of devotees. We have a special relationship with Krishna. We're proud to be devotees. And we always had the support of our parents in terms of, which for a small child, it means a lot, right? So you've seen children, they become like lions when their parents are there. They'll be, strong and clear, and they'll play with friends aggressively. And as soon as the parents leave, then they become really scared. Right? Having the parents' support is very important for their growth. And as they grow up, then their example becomes the model to follow, basically.
The next two, one is good association. So Prabhupada stresses a lot, and we've already talked quite a bit about, you know, providing good role models and for our children, which is very, very important. Prabhupada gives many, many examples. He said, children, they have no independent psychology. In other words, whatever we make them, they come accordingly. He gives the example of the story of Tarzan, where he grew up with monkeys, so he had all the habits of monkeys. So if we keep children in good association, they will become saintly. But if we keep them in bad association, they will become demons. So children are very, very innocent. And therefore, providing them with, it's up to us how we train them. And Prabhupada gives the example of how somebody by birth doesn't like to smoke and drink. It is cultivated by association. It's not something that he automatically likes. So by bad association, he will start smoking and drinking. So similarly, if you give children the right association, they will do well. And of course, there's so many different kinds of association within our Krishna conscious environment. Our own association, of course, as parents at home, and also the association of others in the temple, senior devotees, gurus, sannyasis. We can encourage our children to associate with them, travel with them sometimes. I did that with my children as they got older, like 12 years old, they started traveling. There were three sannyasis who were regularly coming to Boise, and they had the opportunity to travel with them to India and other places. So they could intimately associate with people who were very advanced, much more advanced than us, you know, who had no material, you know, attachments. So they could, you know, look up to them. And they had very lasting impression. In fact, Radhika maybe wants to talk about some, you know, lasting impression that the association of these, of our gurus have on small children.
Yeah, just briefly, I remember so clearly one time, Ganapati Swami, he doesn't preach in India so much. He's mostly preaching in the United States in colleges and universities, traveling from place to place in his van and distributing Srila Prabhupada's books. He used to come to Boise at a time when very few other devotees used to visit our temple there. We're quite in the middle of nowhere, so to speak, in the United States. And I remember one Janmashtami, the festival was going on. This was actually after Janmashtami, on the morning of Vyas Puja. And he came into the temple room and he said, it doesn't matter, yesterday was a festival, but we cannot worship Srila Prabhupada in a dirty temple room. And you know, it was a big festival, it was just our family, 100 people came, and it was like overwhelming, and so much prasad was there, and so many things were there. And then that morning he systematically trained us how to clean. Like it was, I remember my main like training in terms of cleaning. And he just did it spontaneously. But he took both myself and my brother, and he taught us how to find places, how to find dirt in places that we never thought it would be. Right? And how to dig and clean and properly and scrub. And he'd come back and say, no, this is not good enough, and do it again. And that type of association, sometimes that type of instruction, even the parents cannot provide. It means the children, they look up to and they listen to role models who are their superiors in so many different ways. And so that type of association with senior devotees, whether they're sannyasis or senior prabhujis or senior matajis, it really helps. It provides that kind of extra care and direction that children can look up to in a way that even perhaps they might not get from their parents.
I just want to read you a small letter that my younger son wrote just a few months ago to one of the three sannyasis, to Ganapati Swami, just lately, recently, and I was quite surprised to read that, so I thought it was very nice, and just went to show the impact of, you know, of such advanced souls on a child. It's just a small section of the letter, so I'll read it to you. I read your Vyas Puja offering to Srila Prabhupada this year, and somehow it really touched me. It also brought back many memories of your visits to Boise and your selfless preaching in Boise, both in the university and to our family. Some of the best memories of my life are being with you in Boise, when I had the chance to go with you to the book tables, to Harinams and evening home programs. I also remember the time when you took my brother and me to Vrindavan, Mayapur, and the Science and Religion Conference in Calcutta. All these things continue to stay with me, and I continue to hanker for your association again. When I read your Vyas Puja offering, I was thinking that maybe, if Krishna is merciful, in my next life I could once again assist you in some small way in your Sankirtan, the insignificant servant Gopal Haridas. So I was quite surprised. It just happened lately. So, and he's a big boy now. So these things are, this kind of association has a very deep impact on the children, you know. Association of each other, elders, elder devotees. So we all have to be very good examples for all the children here, not just the parents. We should try to help children, you know, in their training as adults. Krishna consciousness, we'll go to the next slide, in the early years up to age 5. So now we're going to talk about what to do with different ages, how to train children, you know, in different ages. So for children from birth until year up to age 5 is a very important age for training. When, you know, formal education begins at 5. So we tend to think that, oh, that's when the training should begin. I mean, children, when they're young, what do you do with them? You know, just lay around or whatever. But really, we understand from the Shastra and from Srila Prabhupada that training begins from day one, from right from the womb. So, and of course, you know, children, the younger they are, the more they soak, they're like sponges, soaking up everything around them. So even as infants, children are picking up a lot of things, you know. So keeping a nice Krishna conscious atmosphere at home, you know, always the chanting going on. You know, I would strategically place different things within the eyesight of the child. You know how the child can see just in a certain direction. So keeping pictures of Krishna or deities of Krishna strategically in ways where the child is always seeing Krishna, watching Krishna, hearing Krishna. So the child may not be understanding or participating, but he's picking up, he's observing. And that's very, very important for even an infant to be in that kind of atmosphere. And of course, you know, feeding them mother's milk and food, you know, which has been cooked at home and offered. In America now is the big trend now. Nobody cooks food for babies at home. The supermarket is flooded with baby food, these small bottles of baby food. You can practically get anything you want. Mashed up vegetables and apples and, you know, even beef, mashed up beef for small kids. So everything's there. Nobody cooks for babies. But of course, we know that that is not good for children. Even at that age, we need to give them always prasadam. Just 2 days ago in Delhi, somebody was asking me about some kind of baby cereal. When the child, you know, is ready for solids, then there's things out in the market where it's just, you know, mashed up cereal. So she was wondering about that. I said, you know, in the old days, they used to give, dal pani, you know, and things like that. What's wrong with that? It's very strong. I mean, water, just dal water is so nutritious. Try to find out from your elders all those things, you know, and you can feed the children that. You don't need to buy those things out there. They're simply for promotion, you know, to make, you know, parents feel they don't have to do anything. But it doesn't take too much. We're cooking dal anyway every day. So things like that, we have to be very careful that even for infants, we want to cultivate Krishna consciousness for them in the right manner. And then, of course, they grow into toddlers and preschoolers, and their Krishna consciousness, there's more facility, you know, variety. They need more variety of Krishna consciousness during that time. And, of course, their biggest activity is play. We know children who are toddlers, they don't want to sit in one place. They're all over the place. So we can do different things. So Prabhupada keeps on telling us how children, because they have a desire to play, we should dovetail that desire of playing into Krishna conscious activities. In other words, like for indoor games, children like to play with toys. So instead of giving them plastic toys, we can give them toys related to Krishna consciousness, like kitchen sets, you know, where they are cooking. Even boys, they like to cook and make chapatis and things like that, you know, and offer it to Krishna. You know, where they can imitate a temple lifestyle, all the while thinking about worshipping, serving Krishna. So we can provide it, things like that. And these things are very simple. They can be found around the house. You don't have to go looking for them, right? And children, you know, they're happy. We think children are happy with all those things out there, but it's really us. We want to give them. We want to spoil them with that, and that doesn't help their Krishna consciousness. So, and for outdoor games, children, whatever they see, it's reflected in their playing habits. You know, if they watch television, you'll notice that all their games revolve around what they watch on television, right? So if they read about, always think about Krishna, their games will be about Krishna. So outdoor games, we all, you know, familiar, we may have seen our children playing with swords and bows and arrows, imitating, you know, Ram, the fight between Ram and Ravan, you know, like that. So, and Krishna playing with his friends, becoming cowherd boys, peacocks, frogs. So we should encourage that. We should play with them like that. We should encourage that kind of playing. So all the time they're thinking about Krishna. And it's like associating with Krishna. It's really non-different. See, if children are raised in that kind of atmosphere, they will always think of Krishna. One thing that, you know, I try to do is, we were reading Prahlad Maharaj's story while, you know, we were studying. And I was very impressed with the fact that Prahlad shunned playthings, toys, you know. It said in one of the purposes, Prabhupada writes how Prahlad, so how is it possible? You know, children have to play. So this is what Prabhupada meant, is that, yes, children will have to play, but they necessarily don't have to waste their time playing frivolous things. In other words, at one place Prabhupada said, do not let them waste time. Children have a tendency to waste time. And he compared them to materialists, how much they waste time. So it's the guardians, he writes, the parents, who should make sure that the children do not waste time. And the way I did it is that wherever I went, I took my children with me. Whatever I did, they were with me. Either as participants, as observers, in any fashion, I would take them with me. So they would soak in. So in other words, you know, if I have to go and do, if we are going for preaching, I took them with me, you know, for Harinam, for book distribution. And they had a lot of fun. It was fun activity for them. So rather than leaving them alone at home with the maids or, you know, other people to look after them, we should take our children with us. We should not leave them alone at home. Because if we don't involve the children in our activities, then they will very soon lose interest in that activity. In other words, if we do Krishna consciousness separately from the children will lose interest in Krishna consciousness. And we should not be surprised when they're happy we are gone to the temple and they can sit at home and do their computer stuff. I know it requires a lot of involvement, a lot of hard work on the part of the parents, but it is a sacrifice we want to do for our children. Taking care of children is pure devotional activity. It's how we make it. Because they are our future. And because they are getting this training from day one, they can become really empowered preachers. And they can affect the lives of hundreds of people. Go to the next one. Yeah. Then, of course, in the early years, also, there's a lot of time we have to fill in, right? That's also, so I would also do deity worship with them. Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that any religion that does not have any provision for deity worship, children that are raised in that kind of atmosphere they will very soon become atheists. So he said, deity worship is the foundation of humanity. Is the fourth. And the reason why he said that is because deity worship helps the children focus their mind on Krishna. They can see Krishna. They can focus. Besides all the other benefits that we are well aware of. Besides learning cleanliness, punctuality. You know, it's hard to be punctual in a home situation. But at least they know we have to be clean. They know that they have to take a shower before they touch the deities. We can teach them all these nice things. So in our own life, we, you know, we did deity worship when my children were 3 and 5. We had 4-inch Gornitai deities that, actually, you know, Mother Nautaki, she's in Mira Road, right? Nautaki, she's the one who actually gifted us with those Gornitai. I still remember them. And they got very attached to them. And when my husband went to work, we would, after that, we would begin our deity worship and spend hours doing that. Sometimes 3 hours, 4 hours, sometimes 2 hours, depending on the attention span for that day. Sometimes, you know, if they were sick, less time, you know. But we would bathe them every day, dress them, ornament them, put them back on the altar, you know, make an offering of food, go in the kitchen, make an offering of food, aarti, read about them. So we spend half a day or less than, sometimes less than half a day doing that. So children will play with something. You have to spend time with them. And rather than getting frustrated over different things about their misbehavior and all that, why not engage them? And it was surprising. They would get very little distracted. And of course, there would be accidents. They would spill water and do all kinds of things, you know. But still, I was there always with them. I always with them, training them how to respect them as a Supreme Lord. But also forgiving them for their faults. And, you know, once, you know, and then they eventually grow up understanding that Krishna is not only their worshipable Lord, but also their friend, somebody they can relate to and pray to. And it would be very cute, you know, they would go and make an offering, you know, we would, you know, 100 times a day, you know, apples, whenever I cut apples, oh, they would remind me, did you offer? And they would take the apple and ring the bell and make an offering. And they would say their own sweet prayer. Mantra was too hard for them, for Krishna to bless the food. So all these things are very, very important for cultivating Krishna consciousness. We should not, you know, downplay them.
Radhika, do you have anything?
No, I can break for questions if somebody has a question. Yes. So. You want to start that? Just start that. Just a little quicker. Come on. Shoot again. Question is what time is it?
You all were mentioning that we should not show TV. So So, okay, that's another issue. Now, what about, there are some cartoon series like Tom, Jerry, Mickey Mouse. What is your opinion about that?
So that's a good question. I forgot to mention about cartoons. The days of innocent and really sweet cartoons are over now, unfortunately. if you look at like Bugs Bunny and things like that from, I don't know, the 60s or even earlier, then sometimes you find very innocent and very funny humor. But these days, these cartoons are actually, they've done studies about this, are full with as much violence and sexual suggestions as our adult things. You find, it looks really happy and innocent where the one guy, you know, beats the other one on the head and he flattens out and then he pops back up again. But all that is not reality. You know, if they see in Mahabharata, for example, someone is hit on the head, they get hurt, you know, and that person may even die. They get a more real appreciation about the nature of the world. Whereas cartoons, they're not pure anymore in terms of their content. You don't find that type of innocent cartoons anymore. And then the other point is that the cartoons are plagued by the same problem of commercials and advertisements in between. Anytime you turn on the television, the problem is you may be targeting just one particular show you want to have your children watch. But the problem is once the television is on, it's very difficult to turn it off. Right? So even there might be, you might argue that, oh, just this show is very good. I want to watch it. But the point is once the habit is there of taking enjoyment from the screen, then that habit is very difficult to break. In other words, one day when you're not there to watch, then the child will continue watching. Or one day when the child goes to sleep, then you'll continue watching. You know? So it's very difficult to stop. It's just like they say that one glass of wine is good for your health. Right? But who stops at one glass of wine? You keep drinking wine, you become a drunkard. You know? So it becomes a habit, in other words. You're not drinking it for health. It becomes a source of enjoyment. And as soon as it becomes a source of enjoyment, then the problem arises. Right? So something may be, one might argue even for, oh, this is okay, this is innocent, or even this is positive. But the point is when the overall medium and the overall content is negative, then we don't want to come close enough to it to risk the danger. You know, so that's kind of the problem with television. Basically, it's addictive in nature. It's like taking a little bit of drugs or a little bit of alcohol. It makes the whole atmosphere impure and it causes addiction, basically. So there's no, you might be able to keep up that one glass of wine for a few years, but eventually you'll start drinking more. You know, some problem in life will happen, some difficulty, and you'll drink a few more glasses and then the bad cycle will begin. Right? So we, as devotees, we just say, no, you don't, good for health, bad for health. You stay away from wine. We don't drink it. Television is kind of similar in the same way. Yeah, so what about the spiritual stories? What about Krishna conscious stories? That was one exception that my parents made in terms of using the television. We had a television that would not receive any signal. It was just for a VCR, the cassette and the screen. And so as children, when we needed some kind of break or entertainment, as a family, we'd sit down and we'd watch some Mahabharata or we'd watch some Ramayana. And we enjoyed doing those things. And then later on in our playtime, we would act out various kinds of scenes. As Ram and Lakshman or from the Mahabharata and so forth. Right? So some, or ISKCON television, ITV has some nice documentaries and so forth, so some Krishna conscious films. So again, in these things are okay in moderation. You know, we do it as a family activity rather than the point when the problem arises is when it becomes a substitute for parents, substitute for constructive activity. That, oh, I'm too busy for you, so sit you down in front of the TV. And unfortunately, practically everyone uses the television in that way. It turns the television on and you turn the children off, right? That's kind of the connection between the two. And that's the difficult part. But sitting down together, watching Mahabharata, that's okay. Because there's content is controlled there, right? It becomes like a medium of hearing rather than a medium of advertisement in television.
Hare Krishna, Madhuri.
Hare Krishna.
Madhuri, I wanted to check how, what was your support system? Did you have maids, or did you, I mean, how did you handle so many activities, you know? Normally, we would, you know, try and visualize, you know, cooking and then, you know, offering bhoga and then washing the plates and then. So, did you have a support system, or did you do it and the family did it all by itself, all by yourself?
Yeah, we did it together as a family, so that made it easier and more, you know.
So there was no maid or.
In America, it's hard to get maids. Yeah, it is very good. Yeah, it's. A little easier here in terms of maids and helping with the cleaning and all that. Yeah, it used to be a big struggle sometimes, but we kept going. And I think our satisfaction came in getting that pleasure from, you know, Krishna, you know, that enjoyment from Krishna consciousness that kept us going.
The other thing was that there was a lot of work around the house in relation to the temple. My parents were running the temple, and our life was pretty much revolving around that, preparing for the weekly Sunday festivals as well as the bigger festivals. And then at some point in the middle of our homeschooling, they also started Govinda's restaurant in Boise, which they were running on their own basically with the help of one dishwasher, part-time dishwasher. So that was even more work. But some of the best times in my homeschooling I remember was in relation to the restaurant and the temple. Because the thing was that although it was a lot of work, part of our homeschooling education was doing all of that work with the family. So in other words, we ran the cash register in the restaurant. We introduced the customers to the food, explained the different items in the menu. And this is, we'll talk about this later, but this is how we got a lot of our social skills. In terms of interacting with people, how to explain things to them. You learn so many things regarding public speaking and being comfortable expressing yourself as a devotee. All these things that you take courses for in college or read self-help books for, things like that, one can learn automatically by simply living a Krishna conscious life together. And the idea of together is the key, as my mother saying. That because we did, when there was work in the kitchen, it was like practically a daily routine for us, helping our mother clean the kitchen once a day. Because there's no one to clean the kitchen, by the end of the day, she's doing so much cooking, and these pots would pile up, and we'd help in the kitchen and clean up and like that. So it was a sense of obligation. In other words, some of our friends in America, it was common that parents would give them some pocket money if they did some chores around the house. If they, every week they were required to vacuum the floor or sweep something or help in the kitchen, they'd get some pocket money as a result. And I remember the first time I heard from my friends they were doing this, it was a huge shock for me. I was like, you actually get paid for doing that stuff? And they said, yeah, why else would you do it? And it never occurred to me. I thought, why else? I mean, we're eating the same food, so my mother would say, now you have to help out cleaning up, and we'd be, you know, some activity would be there, and we'd all be doing it together. So that, I think that, that aspect of creating that sense of duty and obligation is very important. And it brings with it so many life and social skills that are important. So we'll be talking about this more in detail when we cover the section on preaching is the essence. So I think at this point, because we want to get through the bulk of the slides and we don't want to keep all of you too late, we still have two sections of the... We did the introduction section and the first section. We still have two sections left. So we want to keep moving. But remember, there's a full three-hour question and answer session on Monday. This is specifically for this group, and then another question and answer for another group. So there's going to be plenty of opportunity for question and answer session as well as personally later on. But we'll try to move a little bit more quickly now so that at the end also we can have time for question and answer. And that way people who need to go can go, and those who can want to stay for question and answers can stay, and we can continue till Mangalarti.
Yeah, especially the question and answers. The question and answers relating to, from Radhika Raman would be okay today because he's not going to be here on Monday. So,
yeah, I won't be here on Monday. So if there's anything specifically you wanted to ask me, then later on when we have more time for question and answer, we can take that. But my parents will be both here until Monday night. I have to leave on Sunday night to get back to my teaching at the university.
So the next one is... So when we, as we send our children to, most of you are sending your children to school, as I understand. So it's important to also, among the Krishna conscious activities that we do for our children, it's also important to encourage them to read Srila Prabhupada's books on a daily level. And the reason is because there is so much of bombardment of, you know, atheism, impersonalism out there, that in order to give them the right vision, the right Vedic perspective, reading of Srila Prabhupada's books is of great importance. And actually, Prabhupada specified that many, many times in his letters to disciples. He said he wanted the children to be reading his books. He wanted the children to be learning Sanskrit and English just so they could read his books very seriously. He said that, especially for Srimad Bhagavatam, he said that in Srimad Bhagavatam, everything can be found. It is like the desire tree. Anything that you desire is there. And because it starts from the point of creation, it covers every subject matter in the world. And he even specified that. He says there's literature, there's poetry, there's philosophy, there's atomic theory, there's sociology, psychology. So everything can be found in Srimad Bhagavatam. And I personally experienced that. After that was the main part of my curriculum for them. I taught my children entirely from Srila Prabhupada's books, especially from Srimad Bhagavatam. And within a span of like 5 years, I noticed that they had a good grasp of the language. They were, you know, they had learned critical thinking, logical thinking, philosophy. Because when they had to go to college, and they were doing those other subjects for the first time, sociology and humanities and all kinds of subjects, psychology, they had no problem at all, even Shakespeare. And that was because the books, his books, had already contained that subject. So if they get a good grounding of these subjects from Srila Prabhupada's books, and they get a good foundation of these subjects from that book, so that when they do have to study these subject matter from other outside mundane books, then they will not be misled. They will not have doubts. They will be able to understand it in the proper perspective. So Srila Prabhupada's books are very, very potent also. I noticed when they were doing it, there's almost like a miraculous feeling, effect on them. Their language abilities shot up. They were, their level of deep thinking was amazing. You know, they were thinking in a deep way that would be unlike a child, you know. And that was all, you know, shown by the time, you know, they went to college, where teachers told me that the dean was very hesitant to admit them in college for the fact that they were very young, and he said that they would be emotionally immature. But they did go in after we convinced him, and the teacher was surprised. He says the emotional maturity was better than all the students there. And the reason is, it's because Prabhupada says that Srimad Bhagavatam helps you understand every psychological situation in the world. And we are well aware of that. You know, the stories that we cover, they relate to our lives. So that's the advantage of teaching. So when we teach our children from Srila Prabhupada's books, they can handle the bombardment outside. They can handle what goes on outside. And when you hear Prabhupada's classes and lectures and the devil's advocate that he plays during his morning walks, You can learn so much from them. And the children can be, you know, can defeat so many things, like the Big Bang Theory. He talks about how, you know, how the, you know, he talks about the scientists and their vision and our vision. And he compares them so nicely. He gives the example how if they see a tree, it's just a tree for them. But when a devotee sees a tree, he sees the creator behind it. He sees the seeds that is present in every fruit and how every seed contains a tree in itself. So they learn so much, you know, they get so much philosophy and depth. And it's very, very beneficial for them. So we should take out every evening, even for 15 minutes, and read something with the children. And we can begin by reading stories of Dhruva and Prahlad Maharaj, whose heroes are children themselves. And children can relate with them very easily. And as they read with those stories, the character of those personalities rubs on them. And when the character rubs on them, then they are able to follow the instructions. And as we read, in the beginning we just simply read translations. And as we read, their curiosity would be, tickled. And then they would want to know more and more. And then we would have to take shelter of the puppets, Srila Prabhupada's puppets. And that's how we finished the entire Bhagavatam.
So we can just read the quotations here that are on the screen. They're very inspiring. Srila Prabhupada, he says, our students specifically, they should take care of reading Srimad Bhagavatam. We have therefore prescribed in our school Dalits, and from the very beginning, if they begin education with Bhagavad Gita and then come to Srimad Bhagavatam and read the whole literature, then they will be more than MA, PhD. Even astronomy, astrology, politics, sociology, atomic theory, everything is there. Therefore, if we study Srimad Bhagavatam very carefully, then you get all knowledge completely. Throughout the whole world, whatever knowledge is there is in the Srimad Bhagavatam. If one simply reads this Srimad Bhagavatam, his education is the topmost. If one studies Srimad Bhagavatam, he is well versed in every subject matter. So, one thing I wanted to describe is my own experience in this regard. My mother has described the importance, spiritually speaking, of studying Srimad Bhagavatam and Shastra through Srila Prabhupada's books. At the same time, we should not think that, they'll only be getting a spiritual education as a result. They'll only become pundits and they'll be quoting Shastra all the time and they won't have any real academic knowledge. In fact, when we give them spiritual education, the material education also follows. And Srila Prabhupada's books, they're something that are that come with so many benefits. Prabhupada's language, just in terms of the language arts, Prabhupada's English is at least at graduate level, postgraduate level English. It's very, very erudite. And we've found in our own community children who are 5-6 years old, they sit in Bhagavatam class and they read Prabhupada's purports. And everyone, all their friends and everyone is amazed that their ability, their capability of reading is so good. Prabhupada uses words, we're so used to hearing words like transcendental, ecstatic, three features of Godhead and super soul, things like, so many words are there. And we just think, oh, this is just common language. But these words are very, very difficult English words. You find them in like very academic type literature. Prabhupada's English was very highly trained and very erudite English. He was following in the tradition of British education and also in the tradition of his own spiritual masters, erudite writing in English. So that ability develops, the vocabulary, for example, in terms of basic subjects. Vocabulary skills increase so much. I remember one time in the restaurant, we were explaining something about Krishna consciousness to one of the guests, one of the people who came to eat there. People would often get interested in the philosophy behind the food. And I was explaining something and to two ladies, and one of them turned to the other one and went, his vocabulary. Did you hear that word he used? You know, and she was so genuinely amazed. And for me, it was like, oh no, this is how we talk on a regular basis, you know. So, we don't realize the level of knowledge and education that we get in Prabhupada's books, not just spiritually, but also academically. Also in terms of our ability to grasp. Besides vocabulary, the ability to reason and to think critically. These days, if you look at university education, it's all about critical thinking. Right? Thinking in such a way that you can make reasoned arguments, you can apply your intelligence. Right? This is, it's not so much about content and information download as it is about giving people tools for critical thinking so they can make the decisions. If they're becoming a businessman or a manager, making difficult decisions, looking at your various options, playing the devil's advocate, that type of sophisticated thinking is found so everywhere in Srila Prabhupada's books. Again, we often don't realize. Right? We often say, oh, Krishna has three energies, right? Material, internal energy, external energy, marginal energy. Krishna, there's three features of Godhead. The impersonal feature, Brahman, Paramatma, Bhagavan. All these concepts, this is not, if you talk to the average person on the street, this type of philosophy is not accessible to most people. It's not comprehensible. Right? We think it's ordinary. I'm not the body, I'm the soul and everything. But forget Western society, even in Indian society, this type of philosophical reasoning is not present anymore. I remember going to a conference once and explaining to a fellow graduate student who was there about the concept of, I was just basic philosophy, we're not this material body, and therefore all the labels that we apply on the body, I'm white, I'm black, I'm American, I'm Indian, these are all external to the body. They're all superficial. But we are the spirit soul within. And this man, he looked at me and he said, wow, that's so deep. That's so deep. And I remember that was the first time I remember being struck, thinking, yeah, I take these things for granted. You know, I think, oh, this is just basic child philosophy, day to day. Even a 5-year-old in the movement could tell you this philosophy. Right? But as Srila Prabhupada is saying, this philosophy, if you compare it with people's average level of thinking and ability for critical thinking, it's at the level of MA, PhD. To be able to think abstract and think in terms of three different types of energy and three different types of features of one deity, right, one supreme Godhead, that Christians spend so much time trying to explain how the Trinity, three persons, can be one Godhead. Right? Such a difficult time trying to explain. We do this on a regular basis, right? On a commonly basis. And this type of abstract thinking is exactly what they try to teach you in good universities and colleges. Right? So I remember I entered university at quite an early age. I was almost 13 at that time. And I remember the first day of class is when I went there. It was quite intimidating. I was supposed to sign up for an introduction to English class, English writing course. Every student has to take. It's called English 101. And somehow all the sections of English 101 were already full, the classes. In America, you have to register in advance, otherwise you don't get a seat. So the chair of the department, who we knew, said, okay, why don't you try for the second semester, English 102? As it turned out, that was also full. So then he said, why don't you try for the English honors writing first semester for advanced students? As it turned out, that was not being offered that semester. So he said, why don't you sign up for the English honors writing second semester? And I don't know. I mean, I've never operated in a university environment, and to immediately go at that level. He said, no, don't worry. Just do it. On the first day of class, I remember it was so intimidating. I was so much younger than the other students, and I'd never... We had a curriculum based almost completely on Srila Prabhupada's books. Some other subjects were there, math textbooks and a few other things. And here in the list of reading was classical literature, like Shakespeare's Hamlet we read, the Iliad and the Odyssey of Homer we read. We read classical Mexican writers and so forth. And it was frightening in the beginning, but once we started... It was amazing. The professor was so happy with the quality of papers and stuff I wrote. She said, your observations in the Homer's Iliad and Odyssey, said they're very, very interesting. Where do you get them from? And it was all things that we had learned from studying Mahabharata, Ramayana, Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada's books, the different scenes they would describe. It's like an epic story, basically. Almost very similar to Mahabharata, Homer's epics, if you read them. Shakespeare, he has so much philosophy in them. And most of the students would just... go over the story. You know Shakespeare's Hamlet story? is practically very similar to the story of Arjun, and his Arjun's problem is very similar to Hamlet's problem. Of course, Hamlet doesn't have Krishna there to resolve it, but the situation is very similar. To be or not to be, that is the question. What should I do in this situation? Should I just leave? Should I face it? He had to end up killing and fighting his own relatives. It was not difficult to relate to it, because we had studied all of this in Prabhupada's books. So we should never underestimate the quality of what Srila Prabhupada has given us. It's really, really amazing. Prabhupada spent his life translating and writing these books. And when he says everything is there in his books, it's something we have to completely take with faith. It takes time to develop that faith. It takes a little while. But over time, we see, oh yeah, everything that I wanted is coming from that. So, and Srimad Bhagavatam especially. Like my mother was saying, in the beginning, it's nice to read translations. Even if the children are going to school and it's you don't have a whole lot of time, but even spending half hour with them in the evening, reading Bhagavatam together. And when they're small, you can just read translations only. And it reads just like a story. And the key there is to try to discuss as much as possible. I remember my mother, she used to discuss so much. Everything, every time we'd encounter, why does Dhruva Maharaj do this? Why is Dhruva Maharaj angry? Why does his mother not do anything to help Dhruva Maharaj? Right? Why does she say, go to Krishna? Why does she send him away to the forest? Why does Dhruva Maharaj reject the advice of his spiritual master, Narada Muni? Narada Muni says, go home, give up your desire. Why does he not accept that? What changes when he sees Lord Krishna? So many, like my mother saying, psychological conditions, questions, role models for children, so many things are there. And she would discuss at every step. We'd have a question or something like that and we'd talk about it. And sometimes we'd come to a question that we couldn't answer. So then we'd have to look into the purports. And almost every time, the exact question we had, Prabhupada would answer it in the purport. Have you ever had this experience? You're reading Prabhupada's books and you're wondering some question. You're wondering some kind of a question and Prabhupada will address that very question in that purport or the next purport. It's like he reads our mind, practically speaking. So from reading translations, we gradually went to reading translations and purports. It became kind of a natural progression. So even if we can do it for half hour in the evening with children, or 1 hour, or however, you'll find it difficult to stop after you become, everyone, the parents, the children, everyone becomes addicted to it. And it really becomes a pleasure to read Srimad Bhagavatam.
So for children, it's like fun because you're reading stories. So I would pick out stories like Dhruva, Prahlad, Maharaj, Gajendra stories. So they're all fun stories. And they think they're stories, but the mother knows what she's trying to get at, you know. So it's a very nice thing because through the story, she's trying to convince the child on the superiority of the Vedic perspective at every step, you know, by questioning, by playing the devil's advocate, by bringing in things, you know, relating to practical life. So the child doesn't know all this is happening, but we know what we're trying to get at. For this, we don't need some extra intelligence. It's just common sense things, you know, that we can gather as we read. So
One of the things that we have as part of this course, the devotees who are organizing it, I think Shubha Vilas Prabhu specifically, he has available a printout of a copy of all these slides, as well as a couple samples of question and answers of study guides for Srimad Bhagavatam that my mother's made to kind of help people get started. Different questions for discussion that you can read, that as you read with your children, you can use for discussion. And those materials, they've said, will be made available through email, through a soft copy to all of you. So please make sure, I'm not sure how it's being set up, but please make sure to give your email to the right person so that you can get copies of this, two sample chapters from Bhagavatam, one from Prahlad Maharaj's story and one from Dhruva Maharaj's story, which will hopefully help get started in terms of that study.
Yeah, okay. We'll do Sanskrit now. we've done this already. Yeah. Preaching, or should we do Sanskrit? You can speak a little bit about Sanskrit. So basically, I based my homeschooling on in the five subjects. That was English,
reading,
writing, arithmetic, rote, and raga. These are the five R's. Rote is memorization, and raga is music. So, if we teach the children these five things for the first 12 years of their life and nothing else, then they can pick up anything else later on in their life. Because these become the foundation. And if they're good in these five subjects, then it's not difficult for them to pick up any other subject, like science and geography. But if their language skills are weak and their writing skills are weak, then no matter what you're trying to teach them, they will be stumbling. So besides these five things that we did also Sanskrit. And we were very fortunate to have a Sanskrit teacher in town. And Radhika will be telling you a little bit about that. And Prabhupada did not really, wasn't so much in favor of teaching Sanskrit for adults because he wasn't interested, he didn't really want just grammarians. But he did encourage children to start learning Sanskrit because they have a longer time to learn the grammar. It takes about 12, 13 years to really master the grammar. And by studying Sanskrit, he really wanted them to appreciate his books. So Radhika can talk a little bit more about that.
Yeah, if you read Prabhupada's letters on children's education, then he said often that the two most important subjects for children are English and Sanskrit. And he says this repeatedly because he says this will give them the facility to study our Shastras very deeply. Now, again, like my mother said, for adults he didn't encourage it so much because he felt it was, in some sense, a distraction or a waste of time. It takes a while to master Sanskrit. But for children, he emphasized over and over and over again. So now, of course, Sanskrit in India, we're quite familiar with, and many of us, we take Sanskrit growing up in school and so forth. Many children, they develop a great distaste for the language. It becomes something that's very boring and a lot of rote, palam palay palani, palam palay palani. Just, you have one form after another. And this is because we don't see the point of studying it. The same thing happened with Latin and Greek in Western education. After a while, no one was interested in studying Latin and Greek, and they deleted it from the subjects. So Sanskrit can be like that. But the point is, for us, for our children, it doesn't have to be such a boring subject, such a disinteresting subject, because we have a reason to study it. And one of the nicest ways to study it, even if the children cannot do like a full study of Sanskrit in terms of the grammar and reading and like a systematic study, even then, one nice way of doing it, and which Prabhupada encouraged, was through memorization of verses. This can be actually a very, very fun activity, especially for younger children, is memorizing a verse a week or even a verse a day. And the memory at that time is so strong, it's so sharp, that practically in one day you can easily memorize one verse. I mean, just like practically with reciting it 20, 25 times and you have it memorized. It's at that age, it's so easy to grasp things. And the verses I know best, even today, are the ones I learned at that age. We started memorizing verses from second chapter of Bhagavad Gita. And practically, I can never forget. Those can never be erased from the mind, because whatever you memorize at that age becomes part of you forever. It becomes part of you forever. And often in the temple, we'd have performances by children. Some summer, one child would decide, oh, I want to memorize 108 verses from Bhagavad Gita. So he'd memorize it the whole summer. This was during the time they had off from school. And at the end of the summer, we'd hold a little program for them at the temple. We'd make copies of all the verses for everyone who came so they could follow along, and the children would recite in front of everyone. It was something that built their self-esteem. They got to show off in front of their friends. They really felt good. And at the same time, they did something very, very nice, very positive. And it sharpens the intelligence. Prabhupada said, rote to memorization is not so popular in education today. But memorization really, the mind is like a muscle. It really sharpens the intelligence. So that's another very fun activity, is memorizing a verse. Even a verse a week goes a long way. It means 52 verses in the year, right? So in 2 years, 108 verses. A nice activity. And through that, we can learn Sanskrit also. Prabhupada said, I've given you, many places he says, what is the need of studying Sanskrit separately? I've given you the verse, and I've given you word for word meanings in all my books and translations. And you start picking up so many things from the verse itself. Right? You start seeing connections between this verse and another. And if you learn the meaning with it, that's essential, then it becomes much easier to memorize the verse also with the meaning.
Prabhupada said it was important, like as a family, we should read a verse every day. He was just reciting the Sanskrit, the word to word, and the translation, you know, is very, very nice because it's a very pious activity. So if the children just hear those verses and repeat them, it, you know, they become very Krishna conscious just by doing that. So as a family, every evening we can read a verse together and read the purport. Just one verse, 15, 20 minutes, is very good. Music is also a very important activity for children. And we know how attracted they are to music. Any kind of music, and they, you know, they want to, you know, bang karthals and play mizanga. So Prabhupada said that, you know, if children by nature, they are attracted to music. So if we don't give them Krishna conscious music right from the beginning of their life, they will try and experiment with all kinds of nonsense music later in their life. So that's why it's important to give them attraction of our music, of devotional music, the sound of kartals, the sound of mridanga, right from the beginning. Otherwise, they will experiment with, you know, the latest rock and roll and all those things. So music is a very good, you know, for them, for creative expression, for leadership, to develop the leadership qualities. I remember when they started learning music, it was such a big help because they could lead kirtans. And all children like to be leaders, quite a few of them. They have this leadership, you know, innate abilities where they want to show off and be leaders. And what a good way of helping them express that is through, you know, giving them that facility to learn these instruments like harmonium and mridanga. And it's not such a big effort. Initially, I didn't have too much musical ability, so I gave them some piano training. But just for a few years, like 2 or 3 years, they had some piano formal training. But then when Ganapati Swami came, he asked me to, you know, he asked us to leave that and asked me to help them develop by ear, and it worked. So so we can try different things, you know, we can try to help them develop music by ear or by formal training. Either way, it's very, very helpful.
It provides a very important, it's an important process of creating a very well-rounded person. Because sometimes in today's world, you know, in education, you have to study so hard, more and more. It's just to succeed in today's world, you practically have to study non-stop. In terms, you start studying when you're 4 years old and you don't stop until you're 18, 19, 20 years old, even beyond if you're getting trained for some kind of a professional career. And the level of intensity in terms of the work just increases. Children spending 12, 13, 14 hours with their books. And unless there's some kind of creative aspect to life, it really creates very one-sided individuals. That desire for creative expression is natural in everyone. Not everyone is a born musician, but the desire to make music, the desire to listen to music, to produce it, that is there in everyone's heart. Not everyone may be good at it, but that doesn't matter, right? Not everyone has to become a great musician. But the ability to actually express oneself musically is so important. And I remember in my own self and my younger brother, often, you know, to get relief from intensive periods of study and so forth, even today, then it's just so nice to pick up the harmonium and play, or to just play the mridanga and give oneself relief, to lose oneself in the kirtan. And Gopal, my younger brother, he has a natural ability to do this. He's very good as a musician. I'm not so kind of a musician by nature. But nevertheless, it just provides that kind of creative relief. And at the same time, of course, it's devotional service.
We can also learn so much philosophy through music, through, you know, playing bhajans and all those things, you know, the Vaishnava songbook. So much philosophy is there. And my younger son, he was not, he's more inclined towards drama and music, and he learned so much just by learning the songs of Narottam Das Thakur and all those things. So it can be very, very valuable in terms of cultivating the devotional spark, and also teaching them so much Krishna conscious philosophy also. So this next slide is how to develop the identity as devotees, how to develop these skills, their social skills. So I'm sure a lot of parents have that question about what kind of friends their children should keep and how many, and what friends are the best friends. And so we also, similarly, we had a hard time with I look back, it's one of the hardest things for my husband and myself to decide what friends are the best friends for them and what kind of association we should give. And then we realized that just a few friends are better than just a host of many, many friends who are not good enough. So if we find some really good friends who are very Krishna conscious and nice, then that goes a lot towards helping them having good peer association and helping them not to get into bad association. So we had that problem because in Boise we were the ones who started at the center, and there wasn't much devotee association. But as the temple grew, the people in the congregation, they had the chance to do things with them and to cultivate their friendships with them when they came on Sunday. The temple becomes a very good resource for developing these social skills when we come together and participate in plays and different activities and encourage the children to take part in it. That becomes a very good avenue for helping them develop their social skills, for them to lose their shyness. I still remember how parents would be so shocked where after a few years of coming to the temple, the children would be totally changed because of their participation in the plays. Initially they would be very shy and uncommunicative, and their whole personality would change. And we were, my husband was very encouraging about, doing a lot of plays. We did a lot of plays, practically one a week for every occasion. It was a good way to preach to the congregation because they were encouraged when they saw their children participate, and so they were encouraged to learn the philosophy this way. So we did a lot of plays, and thereby, my children were learning a lot of skills of, leadership and those things. But one thing that a lot of people have told me is that, how they feel, sometimes it's not possible to get good devotee friendships, good devotee peer friendships, in the community, in their neighborhood. And they are forced to send their children to homes where children are not really, they're watching TV and eating all kinds of things, because after all, children, they are social and they need friendship and all those things. And we become very confused as to what we should do. So we have to be, we have to understand the needs, but at the same time, we have to be very careful about where we are sending them, or where, if we are having slumber parties with children who may not, have good character, or maybe coming from homes where, these things are questionable. So I read what Prabhupada had to say about that, and he really stresses a good adult association over peer association. He says that good adult association should take precedence over peer association. So if he can provide them with good adult association at home and in the temple, that will have a very good positive effect on the children. And we should not worry so much. Just like in America, they separate the children immediately from adults as soon as there's a gathering. Like if they go to church, the children are never with the parents. They have a separate place where they hang out together, So anywhere they don't go together. But yeah, and this creates a kind of a subculture, where you see in society today, the teenagers and young people, children, even children, they have their own culture. They're like a separate species. They have their own clothes, they have their own music, they have their own food, and they don't like to mix with adults. And what is the result? That they don't learn responsibility. They don't know. They don't know how to help adults, how to work in society. So we don't want to create that same problem with our children. And the way to avoid that is to participate, to encourage the children to participate with the adults in every activity, to keep our children with us. Because after all, we have the same interests. We have the same food. We have the same clothes, same interests. So devotees don't have such a generation gap with the children. And if we do have a generation gap, it means that we are doing something wrong. And we have to be careful about that. So, so I'm done. You can move on. No, you want to speak on this one? Okay. Okay. You speak.
Okay. So we have to wrap up here fairly soon. We're almost near the end. We have just three more slides here left on this final topic. Preaching is the essence. Now, one of the greatest struggles in our time as devotees is how to give our children an identity as devotees that they will not give up or be ashamed of as they grow older. Right? This is something a big struggle for many devotee families. The children are very nice devotees when they're younger and they're innocent, but as we grow older, then we start questioning our identity as devotees, becoming ashamed or doesn't look good or we lose interest and so forth. And so one of the most important aspects of creating a strong identity as a devotee, you see, that identity as a devotee is something we have to work for, we have to fight for. Because the default in the world today is to lose that. The world around us will take that away from us. It'll make us feel ashamed, it'll make us feel embarrassed, or what you're doing, this is, you know, they'll make fun of us. And for especially a young adult, a youth, in the teenage years, this can be a very difficult issue, a very difficult problem, because peer association means a lot at those ages. So, preaching activities right from the beginning is the most important thing for creating an identity, a strong identity as devotees. If we take our children on preaching activities with us. In the beginning, as small children, they simply observe and they watch and they assist in many ways. And as they grow older, then they can do it on their own. Right? But the very act of presenting yourself as a devotee in front of others and doing that with the support of parents in the beginning and later on doing it more and more on their own, that makes a person confident that, yes, I'm a devotee of Krishna and I'm proud to be a devotee of Krishna. Most preaching situations are very positive in nature. People appreciate it. They're happy about it. This creates so many positive reinforcements in the child. Yes, being a devotee is a good thing. I'm proud to be a devotee. And every once in a while, there's a negative situation where someone makes fun or laughs or does something bad to the preacher. Then this develops also strength. That it's okay. I will encounter many people in life who don't like me or who will do something bad to me. But it's okay. Krishna is my protector. I have him with me. So, preaching provides that outlet, that social skill, and that identity, that confirmation of identity as a devotee, which is so important in the life of a devotee. Means we can be very good academically. Most Indian children are very good in that regard. We have a culture of studying hard and working hard, and parents encourage in that area. Right? And we can do our devotional life at home also. But unless there's some kind of reaching outward, some kind of preaching activity, our identity as devotees won't be firm. Right? Half the reason we preach is to preach to ourselves, to make ourselves stronger devotees. And the same applies for children. It applies, in fact, even more because they're molded by what they see around them, what the world is saying about them. And being able to stand up in front of the world and say, I'm a devotee of Krishna, and you also please be a devotee of Krishna. That takes a lot of courage. And once you start doing that, and you have to explain Krishna consciousness to others in face of challenges, then your own Krishna consciousness becomes very, very strong.
So in homeschooling, my parents would have, our life was centered around the temple because the temple was practically in our home. And we would do all kinds of activities such as university, college preaching, or going to schools. When we were small, we'd go to elementary schools and hold programs there. And in the beginning, my parents, they used to do the presentation. My mother, she'd do a whole thing. We'd take all these props with us and everything. Books and incense and all kinds of nice things to show them, Krishna art book and so forth. And eventually, as we grew older, we started doing these presentations ourselves. I remember the first one I did was, I was about 12 years old and it was at a high school. And I was very nervous. It was my first outside speaking engagement, outside the temple. Really, my feet were shaking and I was holding on to the podium like anything. But my mother, she just encouraged me. I remember very well. I know it was not a very good performance. But afterwards she said, "Wow, it's so good. You did so well. It was so nice. Really nice. And this is like this. And here's some ways you can improve," and like that. And it developed a whole kind of area of public speaking and relating with the outside world. So many opportunities are there. University, elementary schools, local community fairs, festivals, home programs at your own home with your social friend circle. Any area we can find for preaching is beneficial. It's in fact essential for both education and Krishna consciousness.
Like bhakti vriksha groups, you know, you can have once in a while, you can have programs for children where you allow them to speak and give some presentation, you know, in your own home or community. So, you know. And of course, they learn public speaking and so many other skills like communication and sometimes they, you know, they also took participate in panel discussions and, you know, learned how to debate and, you know, understand other religious views and how to present their own views. So much, you know, in ways to give them those skills rather than spending so much money outside and trying to teach them so many things. Everything is contained within Krishna consciousness. Every skill, every type of education, everything can be found right here. So that's the end.
So there's two topics which we won't have time to cover today, but my parents can cover in the last and final session on Monday. And one is on festivals and using festivals as a medium of education. And the last one is on discipline. And it's just one slide, but it takes a little while to go through the various aspects of that. And usually it elicits a lot of questions and answers also. So it will actually work quite well with the final question and answer session at the end. So these two things. Okay, before we end it, I just wanted to give you the email address for my mother has a Yahoo Groups website where she has a Yahoo group basically where you can send an email to become a member. And in that, people send questions about education and about homeschooling especially. And she responds with an email. And this helps because people often write independently to her, but if you write to the group as a whole, then it benefits everyone else also who's a member of the group. And there's many members from the United States and now more and more from India. So if you'll just... So here's the information. If you type in www.krishnahomeschool.com, this is not a separate website. It will simply lead you to the Yahoo Groups sign-up page. And the Yahoo Group itself is called Krishna Homeschool. So you can also search by going to Yahoo Groups webpage and looking for Krishna Homeschool. And then there is the personal email my mother has, in case any of you would like to contact her. And she's written a series of articles on all these different topics, festivals in Krishna consciousness, how to do preaching activities with children, how to read Srimad Bhagavatam with children, all the various discipline, all these various topics that we've been discussing and will discuss. She's written various articles on it, and she writes regularly. It means it's an ongoing process. Every 2 weeks or so, she posts a new article. On the website here, iskoneducation.org, www.iskoneducation.org. This is the website for the ISKCON Ministry of Education. You can also do a Google search for the Ministry of Educational Development in ISKCON, and it will take you to the same website, iskoneducation.org. And when you go to the website, it has many things, many resources regarding education in ISKCON, which other things you'll also find very useful. Links and contacts to various devotees engaged in educational work within ISKCON. And if you click on the homeschooling link that's there on the left side, you'll come to a webpage in which my mother's articles are posted, the current ones and the ones from the past also. One thing I forgot to mention at the beginning of the seminar is that the ISKCON Ministry of Education Development recently gave their stamp of approval to the seminar itself, and especially to the process of Krishna conscious homeschooling and education of children at home. So we wanted to thank them also for their blessings. This is a body run by the GBC. It's a Ministry of Education, which tries to promote development of educational projects within ISKCON. And we'd like to thank them for their support and blessings in this project. So thank you all very much for your attention. I'm sorry we didn't have too much time for questions, but like I said, you'll have a full 3 hours in the final session if you can make it that day. Otherwise, please get in touch in this way. Thank you all for your attention. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. Some last announcements. Firstly, let us thank Arun.